This is Junk Food Cinema.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
Welcome, zombies and zealots, to another lively episode of Junk Food Cinema here on FilmSchoolRejects.com. This is the weekly cult and exploitation film cast that is so good, it just has to be fattening and is definitely terrifying. I am your host, Brian Salisbury, and joining me as per usual is my friend and co-host, novelist slash screenwriter slash...
C. Robert Gorekill.
Oh, I like that. I like that very much. That sounds messy. And I think that that's very appropriate considering the film we're going to talk about.
Oh, yes. I'm very excited about this episode this week.
We've got buckets of things to talk about this week. But first, I want to remind you guys that you can follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema. You can also backtrack our episodes on the catalog there at Stitcher as well as iTunes and all those podcatching services. You can also like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And if you really like the show, definitely consider becoming a patron. You can go to patreon.com/junkfoodcinema, pledge a little bit per episode, and that helps keep the lights on, helps us deliver the content to you. And in exchange, we will do bonus exclusive episodes just for you. I know this week we're talking about a movie that's in theaters, one of our junk food a la modes. We're talking about The Magnificent Seven.
Yes.
That's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait to do that. But definitely check out patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. And I want to announce, I was negligent last week and forgot to announce the winner of our Chopping Mall Blu-ray giveaway.
Oh, who
yes.
won?
A fan by the name of Kirk Yoshonis at Nova_Scochie on Twitter. We will be contacting you to let you know that you have won a Blu-ray copy of Chopping Mall, courtesy of Vestron Video. Thank you so much to everyone who participated in that Twitter giveaway, and thanks to Vestron for delivering some... I can't wait for you to see this, Kirk. If you haven't seen Chopping Mall already, you are in for a treat. Speaking of treats and tricks alike, we are still in the throes of the Festival of Fear. This is our series where all through October, all blah, 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 blah,
blah. Man, we can do red cap go like this.
This candy apple has a razor in it. What the fuck? Basically, what we're going to be doing all throughout October is we'll be talking about films, horror films that we discovered at film festivals.
And this is modern horror stuff that you
yes.
may or may not have heard of, depending on who you read.
And I will admit that I had not heard of this one. This is one that Cargo recommended because you saw this where?
I saw this at Fright Fest.
At
actually,
Fright Fest.
I wasn't at this Fright Fest, but Fright Fest is a wonderful, wonderful festival in London. The English have a love of horror films. You know, they live in the when you live in London, there's some country to that city.
Mm-hmm.
But they live where it's rainy and dark a lot of the year. And who would guess it? They love horror films, and they love horror films a lot. And they actually connect with horror films on a cultural basis a lot more than we do here. So they hold this great film festival called the Film 4 Fright Fest, in which they show... 4 days of movies, and it's very condensed and it's very cool because what they do is you buy a ticket, and what you're doing is you pick your seat, and that is your seat for the festival, and you sit in that seat at that theater for 4 days and you watch movies. Now they have an additional theater running that is showing indie stuff, and they have a theater that shows repertory stuff, so you can actually go and get tickets to oddball stuff if you want to skip stuff in the main program. But the concept is that you are going to watch the bulk, if not all, of the main program and all of these films they program, and they program a wide variety of stuff. And one of the things I love about these guys is they love horror to the point that they will find these gems that are about to go direct to video that won't necessarily get wide releases, even in England, where they get more wide releases of horror films than we do. They will show these films in a theater just so that they can be shown to this audience so that they get that theatrical experience. And that is just what they did with just such a film as No One Lives.
Now, when you recommended No One Lives and you started explaining to me just on paper what this movie is, we're at dubious level midnight. I was not convinced that a film starring Luke Evans that had been largely dumped direct-to-video, produced by
WWE,
was going to be something. Like, I remember when I heard WWE, I think my dubious eyebrow went all the way to the back of my head. I was like, there is, I mean, the, to be fair, after having that thought, a couple days later, someone did point out that WWE is technically a co-producer on the movie Oculus, which I do really like, but I'm going to go ahead and say that most of the credit for that probably, production-wise, probably goes to Blumhouse more than WWE. Maybe. I mean, come on. But other than that, they make a lot of films that star people like Triple H, The Miz, and John Cena.
That's the whole point of what the studio is. The studio is supposed to be a launching point for their entertainment empire. They also know that guys who love wrestling tend to love genre movies.
This
so why
true.
Not give them genre movies starring their already established heroes, and especially their mature heroes who are ready to start stepping down the physicality because of a lifetime of injuries.
Because their knees are basically jelly. But no, the why not turns out for a lot of these movies is that they are terrible. They are low budget to the point of nigh unwatchable. So then Cargill shows me the trailer.
Hey. Guys from around here.
Please, we don't want any trouble.
Don't mind my boy here. His idea of friendliness is to scare the tourists.
Where are we?
Last place on Earth.
No!
Get away from her.
What were you doing in the trunk of that car?
No! Where is he? You killed him, right? Please tell me he's dead. He's gonna come and he's gonna kill you all. No!
Come on! Bring it!
Do you people have any idea what you're dealing with?
And I was instantly like, yup. This is something we need to... I was like, we're doing this movie. I am convinced that even if I hate this movie, there's enough here to talk about. And as it turns out, I did not hate this movie. This movie is a giant sloppy barrel of fun.
Yes. This is one of those movies that there's two levels of like midnight movie. There is, I'm going to show you something that's fun that comes from a subgenre or comes from a production company or stars certain actors, and it's going to be better than you expect. And then there's the ones that are just god-awful, terrible, but you can have a lot of fun if you have enough beer and a couple friends with. And there are two movies that really kind of stick out to me in recent years. The one that is the latter is this movie that just recently got released called The Horde, which has terrible writing, terrible direction, awful editing, but delivers on a stellar premise in all the ways you want to where you just hoot and holler and cheer.
Yes.
This is one of those movies where it's like, all right, a WWE movie starring Luke Evans. Like right now you're already in, what is it? It's a serial killer, a people in the house movie. Oh my God. It has a twist to its premise, and it is a movie that knows rather than reproducing every other serial killer movie you've ever seen, they're going to take this premise and they're going to wring every last ounce of ingenuity out of that premise and give you that movie you've not actually seen before.
Right.
And this is that fucking movie.
Starring, as Cargill mentioned, Hollywood's detour sign, Luke Evans, who is the guy you don't remember is in some really huge movies.
Well, because you see him and you're like, what is Orlando Bloom? Oh, that's not Orlando Bloom. Oh, that's the guy that looks like Orlando Bloom. Okay. And then, you forget. Like, you look at his list, and you're like, holy shit. Like, he's been in some of the biggest movies of the last 4 or 5 years. Like, we're talking he's in 2 Fast and Furious movies. He's in all 3 Hobbit movies. Like, he's got this, like, holy shit. How did you end up in all these movies? And, oh, yeah, how did I forget you existed? Like, he's that guy. You know, he's just swallowed up by other casts. But this is undeniably his fucking movie.
Oh, 100%. And it's also, this was the other thing that I didn't even know until I was watching it that was really fascinating to me. No One Lives, you know, this little action horror film that was dumped direct to video, is directed by Ryu Kitamura.
Oh, yes.
Who directed fucking Versus? Who directed Midnight Meat Train?
Who directed Izumi? Godzilla Final Wars?
Godzilla Final Wars. And actually, he did a loop in the third live-action movie that I kind of really want to watch. But yeah, like, this is a guy I'm like, hold on a second. I am all kinds of in now. And it turns out this movie, No One Lives, is the epitome of why we started this podcast in the first place. Because, yeah. It's not a great movie. The performances aren't stellar. The writing is not top-notch. But once this thing gets rolling, and it's in its brisk 87-minute runtime, there is no fat on that bone.
No.
This is lean meat that gets shredded all throughout the course of that 87-minute runtime. Because the basic premise is that you have this criminal, like...
No. Oh, wait. Okay.
This criminal family, like these like sort of crazy hillbillies. Although... It's kind of got that 80s vibe where it's like a multicultural criminal organization. You know how in the 80s it was like we have gangs that are like include people of all colors, and clearly like they didn't all grow up together, but they're all part of the same crew for some reason, like a United Underworld Colors of Benetton ad.
No, this is like the Massachusetts redneck family. Like, these are the poor people that would be rednecks in any other movie, but they're not rednecks.
Yeah.
They're just kind of fucking poor who have turned to crime, and they're a burglar ring.
They are, but
they just go and they rob people's houses, rich people's houses or vacation homes when they're not around.
And they have a bit of a penchant for bloodshed is the other thing. They will just as soon shoot you as look at you.
No, there's one member who does, and everybody else is kind of freaked out by that. And that's how this movie, first of all, this movie opens with a woman being chased. It makes no sense to you whatsoever, except that, oh, we're watching this kind of a movie. A woman gets chased. She ends up
snared
in a tree. She's screaming. We don't see any kind of threat. She carves into a tree and then we're into the movie, and now we're with these burglars, and the burglars are robbing a rich home in the suburbs, and lo and behold, the family shows up.
And can we talk about this title card that drops? I mean, in true contemporary horror fashion,
yes.
Something shocking happens, title card, and then someone's driving. This is the fucking formula of contemporary horror. Shocking, title card, people driving. And the title card looks like it was sponsored by Heinz 57. It is so... It's sloppy blood condiments. No One Lives. And it just...
And you know what? And it fits.
Oh, of course.
It feels so right.
It sets us up exactly for what we're about to get.
Yes.
So this crazy criminal group of hillbillies comes across at a bar. We're kind of following two stories now. We got the crazy hillbilly family.
Well, the family shows up, and one of the guys from the crew murders the family. And
murders.
They have to, the family that just shows up, so they take off. They've got to leave everything behind because they can't be busted for a murder. And now they're out their big score, and they go into a bar to kind of drink their sorrows away. And
they run across the paths of a young couple, Luke Evans. And I can't remember what her name was. Tamara, I believe. Is that no? Tamara's a member of the crazy hillbilly family. I can't remember the name of this girlfriend. Emma. No.
That's not no.
It doesn't even matter who this girl.
It doesn't matter because
this girl is.
She's there and gone. And it matters.
Debbie Deadmeat.
It matters on second viewing because on the second viewing, all of her dialogue has a completely different meaning.
Her name is Betty.
And she is this young couple that we're following, Luke Evans. There's something in the past. There's something going on. They had to move. They're not really happy about moving, but they've got to. And there's hints that he has feelings for another woman.
Yeah.
And that he's like, baby, you are the most important thing in my life. Don't worry about it. You are my everything.
There's a line where he says, of course, I don't love her more. It's just different. So you get the sense that at the very least, maybe there was some sort of infidelity. Something weird is going on with this couple. But they run afoul of this crazy redneck family. And, you know, they end up kind of being accosted at the bar. The patriarch of the crazy redneck family is like, you know, don't mind my son. Now, the son who accosts them is, of course, the one who is the most prone to violence. But the father of the redneck family kind of says, you know, like, don't worry. His idea of fun is messing with the tourists, and they start to go their separate ways. But wouldn't you know it, crazy violent redneck son runs them off the road and captures them. And all of a sudden, you think this is the movie that you're in for. You think it's going to be a tortured by crazy rednecks having to
escape. I've seen this before.
So standard, you might be saying to yourself, because apparently you didn't watch the trailer.
So here we've got our characters are, as it said, convalescing in a rundown gas station. Mm-hmm. They've got, you know, essentially tiny, you know, Knuckles, the big brooding bald guy who's going to beat people up, torturing them to get information for bank codes and such so they can clean out their bank accounts. And so the young member of the crew, not the son, actually, but he's not a son, but he is a member of the crew. He's cleaning out the trunk, and then he sees there are air holes in the trunk.
Yeah.
And he opens it up, and there's a girl in there, and he hauls her out, and they haul her into the house, and she's like, tell me you killed him.
Yeah, it turns out it's the girl from the opening of the movie who was being chased.
Tell me you killed him. Tell me he's dead. And then we start to find out that, oh, this guy who is currently chained up in a gas station being shaken down for some bank codes is a demented fucking serial killer, and this crew has taken his most important possession, the girl that he and his girlfriend have been talking about for the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, essentially they just kidnapped John Ryder from The Hitcher, and now they're all going to die. Like, when I watched this trailer, the first thing I thought of was, what happens if the Sawyer family from Texas Chainsaw Massacre kidnaps the wrong people?
Yes.
And then what proceeds to happen is that Luke Evans lays waste to this criminal family and makes them look like Keystone Cops. Like, just the most inept of inept, and brutally, like, no, brutal's not a strong enough word. He unleashes a plague upon these criminals, and we get a very, like I said, it's buckets of blood. It's a very briskly paced movie, and it just runs. Like, a starter gun goes off, and the movie runs to the end credits.
Yeah.
Not slowing down for a second.
Oh, yeah, no. It's like you said, there is no meat on this bone. It is lean as fuck. It is just, once we get into the premise, it is now a bunch of criminals in a house, none of whom we like. Like, yes. That's the thing. Like, every single one of these people is detestable in their own way. There's a great moment where there was one character who kind of had her shit together. And when she gets killed, the girl who is Emma, the girl who is kept in the trunk, just goes, you just killed her. She was the only one of you who had a soul. Yeah. And like, that's the most, and it's the most self-aware moment in the movie where it's like, yeah, that was the one character that we could connect with who actually gave a shit about other people. And now we're just going to watch all these soulless fucks die in horribly grisly ways.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It is the wrath of an evil deity that is unleashed upon this family. And one of my favorite moments in this movie, actually,
I hope it's the moment I think it is.
It's probably
the moment I knew would flip you.
It's probably that moment too. But there's a moment after Luke Evans easily does away with the cronies at the gas station that are holding him captive, where they go to the gas station, they find the dead bodies, they're lugging them around, and you realize Luke Evans is nowhere to be found at this moment.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, the body of the enormous henchman rises up, who's dead, of course, rises up, and you realize Luke Evans is Tauntaun style hiding inside the dead henchman.
He hollowed out this large motherfucker, slid himself in, and is wearing his skin to be taken back to the villain's hideout.
I know it may smell bad, kid, but it'll keep you warm. That, and he literally Trojan horses himself inside of this henchman and comes up looking insane, covered in viscera, and proceeds to,
like, and the beauty is that moment happens. That's the moment,
yeah,
I knew it would flip you. I was,
yeah,
like, if anything wins Brian over, it's that, because that won me over. I was just like, all right, this movie's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
This movie is fucking nuts.
Yeah.
Let's fucking go.
It's at that moment it goes off the rails, lands on a different track, and then crashes into a school.
So this is the moment where Emma is freaking out, going, you don't understand who he is. You don't know what he is. He's going to kill everyone. They watch a TV episode of what happened, because Emma is a famous case of 15 college kids were all murdered, and this girl, this heiress, vanished. and everyone's looking for her. And so we see the what we never see in these movies, which is the aftermath of the movie you'd expect. Like, the movie you think this is the movie that's already happened before this movie started, which is 16 kids out in the cabin, a cabin in the woods, and some crazed madman comes up and kills everybody and then ends up dragging our protagonist off at the end of the movie. And you're like, oh, my God. And that's the movie.
Yeah.
That's, you know, we've seen the all the various Wrong Turn movies. We've seen that movie a million times. This is the movie about what happens after he keeps her.
Seriously, there's a whole movie that happens that happened right before the prologue of this movie.
Yes. And so she flips out and she's like, you don't understand. He's going to kill us. He's going to kill us all. He's not going to let any of you live. He's not going to let us live. And she goes to the door and she opens the door to run out and she just sees him standing out there covered in blood.
Yeah.
And then she just has a smile on her face. She goes, on second thought, I'm going to stand here with you motherfuckers and let you be human shields.
Yeah.
And that's
meaty
what she
lightning
does.
Rods.
She literally hangs with these people to use them as human shields so that she can try to escape while he's busy murdering them.
Yeah.
And she says as much. And then we get to what's really cool. We have a couple flashbacks in this movie where what we see he's doing is he's not just some murderer. He is trying to build his perfect woman.
Yeah.
And he is pulling all of these sociopathic games to mind fuck a woman into being his perfect woman. And what we come to realize after seeing the whole game played and every little bit of information they give us up until the last 2 minutes of the movie, we see who that woman was at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
And how Luke Evans is trying to turn Emma into that.
Yeah.
And it is, he's partially worked. She's something of a hard-ass badass in this, where she's smart, she knows how to make the right choices, she knows how to make the hard choices, and she's willing to sacrifice these awful people around her to get away.
And there's actually a great scene just before she opens that door where she's fighting off all of the members of this criminal family quite adeptly. Like, she's using some martial arts moves and, like, knocking these people out. And the only way they stop her from running away is they point a gun at her. And even that doesn't stop her because they're like, we're going to paint the doorway with your brains. And she's like, we'll just fucking do it then. And she only changes course when she sees Luke Evans out in the yard. And then it's like, oh, shit, the shape is here. We're all fucked.
Yeah. Yeah. And all of this puts a very sad tinge on the first act of this movie.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I really admire about this film is this is one of those films that you guys hear me talk about a lot. It is a film that by all rights should just be schlock. It should be throwaway. You should have a couple beers with it and not need to ever revisit it. And it gives you everything you want. And that's not the film they set out to make. They actually, they set out to make something a little deeper, a little more interesting, and try to get away with pulling off the type of film that when you rewatch it like this, you feel so bad.
Yeah.
Well, that's, for that girl that's with her.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Is this a movie that pays dividends on rewatch?
Yeah.
It definitely does, because you start to realize, like you said, who that girl is and these little moments and these little things. One of my favorite little moments, because I watched this and then I watched the beginning again. Because I was interested to see how they were able to pull that off. Because I watched the trailer, so I knew going into this what the twist was going to be. But then I rewatched the beginning, and one of the things that I thought was really neat is this this whole thing of there's a scar on the girl's abdomen. It's just this little tiny scar. And then when you find out what that is,
and he kisses it, and it's like there's this whole thing to it. So you think there's a story there, and in the last 2 minutes of the movie, you know, we see that Emma's got that scar and he sticks a knife in and we see what that scar is really all about.
Yeah.
And it's a tracking bug.
Yeah.
And so he's kissing the tracking bug, telling her, you can never get away from me because I will always find you unless you dig into your own flesh and take this out.
It's very like something you'd find in like Jigsaw's OK Cupid profile. It's like, you'll never get away from me unless you dig into your own flesh. And it's like, swipe right. I have so much fun with this movie because conceptually it's actually really strong. Like, the dialogue is
it's hit or miss.
There's a lot of miss to it, but But conceptually, this movie is actually really strong. And like I said, it actually rewards revisiting. And Luke Evans really is, he is picking the walls out of his teeth from how much he's chewing this scenery. And I love unhinged Luke Evans. Even in bad movies, unhinged Luke Evans is the best Luke Evans. And to watch him
he's not somebody, they've tried to make him likable. They've tried to make him, a handsome leading man type in certain regards. And that's not who this guy is.
No.
This guy's menace.
Yeah.
This guy's a guy that when he turns on the creep factor, holy shit, does he have the creep factor. Like, you never question for a minute that this guy is going to kill every motherfucker in this house. Like, there's no weakness to him. He's not enjoying it. It's not goofy. This is a singular-minded man who wants to murder people and get his girl back.
Mm-hmm.
And that is it. And you are just like, yep. And he does some pretty inhuman things in this, and you don't really question it.
No.
Like, all right, I buy it. Can you really decapitate a human being with a clipboard? I'm going to say yes, that Luke Evans could.
I will never visit a Staples the same way again, because he fucking owns that dude with a clipboard. And you're right. I at no point was like, oh, well, that's a little bit far-fetched.
It's like, No, I'm buying it from this guy.
He's like, no, totally, that's Luke it. Evans using a clipboard. That's what Luke Evans would use a clipboard for.
And that's what the brilliance of what the director does here. By the moment he has him crawl out of that skin, we're like, look, we're living in a different universe here.
Yeah.
Like, this is a very different kind of borderline supernatural serial killer kind of guy. Go with it, and we promise we will reward you. And boy, howdy, do they.
Yeah. I mean, by the time you get to the shredder scene, where he essentially lowers a dude into what I assume is the old Lionsgate Films logo, because it's just just a bunch of whirling blades for no reason. Like whirling rusted, like, spirally blades. And you're like, I don't think this thing has a practical function in the real world. It's just for this interrogation scene. Where he then drops a guy to become just, you know, meat juice and chunks, in a, literally stuffing him into a blood pinata and leaving it on the front door for somebody to foolishly kick open.
Yeah, but my favorite.
And then it's like, surf's up!
Yeah, except that you kind of brushed over the wonderful part there where he dips him in just a bit and it chews up his head a bit. He's got flesh hanging off. He's screaming. And Luke Evans just reaches up and just peels his ear off.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, fuck, yeah, that's so effective.
That
God.
One hurt.
Oh, it hurts a lot. It was just so well done. And I know intellectually that it's just a cheap effect and it's so easy, but oh my God, it's done so well in the moment that it's just like, this movie is so much better than people expect it to be. And I feel like it was, this was what really surprised me when I found it, because what I did was I was missing Fright Fest that weekend. I know that a lot of the stuff in the US gets released later in the UK when it comes to smaller horror stuff especially.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking up their slate and seeing what they had, you know, prepping to see some stuff at Fantastic Fest and looking to see what had already been released. And I found this one. I was like, No One Lives. All right. I watched the trailer and I got that same reaction you did. I was like, all right, I'm so fucking in for this. And I told Jess and she's like, oh, you want to watch a WWE movie? I'm like, no. Let me show you. Because the thing is when I got to the twist in the trailer, I immediately turned the trailer off. I was like, I'm sold.
Yeah.
I'm done. I don't care what else happens in this movie.
You
I want to see the movie that moment promises.
Yeah.
And so I showed Jess and I stopped right there. She's like, all right, turn on the movie. I want to watch it right now. And man, did we have a good time. This movie is just fun. It delivers absolutely everything it promises to. It never cheaps out. You never feel like, oh, you know, you could have done this a lot better and this a lot better. It's like, for the type of movie this is, it is exactly what you want.
Yeah. And I mean, even the hungriest of gore hounds is going to enjoy this, but at the same time, it stops just short of feeling like torture porn. That's not really, it doesn't have time for that.
No.
It doesn't have time to linger on the violence and really like make it, you know, exploitative on that level, because Luke Evans is running around, because of Luke Evans' agenda, it doesn't have time to let you stop and look at all the murder. In fact, the goriest scene in this movie is the aftermath of a scene where they, like I said, they kick that blood pinata open, and then it's just a bunch of, you know, prop entrails fall on a porch.
And the beauty of that is there's a knock on the door, and they're like, we know it's the fucking killer. And so they're like, well, we gotta look through the lens. Like, they're like, we got to. And they look through the lens like, who is it? It's like, it's a bag. And one of the guys wants to go outside, and someone else closes their door. There's nothing good in the bag. Like, it's just, they're like, you know this. Like, what are you doing? But the guy can't help himself. And it turns out, of course, it's their leader in the bag, or what little pile is, you know, of slop is left of him.
Yeah.
And it's delivered, and it hits every beat right. Like, you know you have to see what's in the bag. Like, intellectually, no, you just leave the bag there. He's trying to fuck with us. I am not falling for the oldest trick in the fucking book. But they're like, you know you want to know what's in the bag. But you know what's in the bag. But you need to know. You need to see it.
Pro tip, guys. If it's not your Instacart delivery, no good has ever come from a bag being anonymously left on your front door.
Nope.
Ever. That's not a thing that's ever been good. It's either a blood pinata, someone's head, or at the very least, it's a flaming bag of shit. So if you see a bag that randomly shows up on your porch, no matter what, just don't go out there. Just leave that shit alone. I think that's a lesson to take away from this movie, for sure. But yeah, again, this movie is careening through a bunch of really fun kills. First of all, the way he dispatches the guy that he ends up, you know, tauntauning, is he kills him through the jaw with the handcuffs that he was locked up with, and then derides a guy like, really? Handcuffs? What, you didn't have zip ties?
You've never heard of zip ties?
Come on.
And then, of course, we see that the girl has been bound by zip ties. Like, yeah. He knows his shit. Like, it's like, oh yeah, you're kind of a crazy serial killer. You can't have your shit together.
This is not his first murder rodeo, but at all. And yeah, so this movie goes to some really fun places, and there's a great scene toward the end where the hotel proprietor shows up just in time to watch Luke Evans, like, turn this guy's head into a water balloon with a shotgun, and he just tells him, I think this guy stole my wallet, and then just kablam town. Just splatters that guy's noggin all over the place.
Yeah.
So much fun. I really fucking dug this movie. More than I ever anticipated liking a WWE produced film.
No, I would, and like, I even knowing Oculus is co-produced by WWE.
Yeah.
I would argue this is the best WWE movie.
Well, there's,
I have not seen all of them, so I cannot say that for certain, but I am pretty sure this is a movie that is better than anything else they've got in their slate.
Oh, I think this climbs at least a hair up the ladder above The Chaperone starring Triple H, and just might squeak across the finish line a little sooner than The Marine Part 12 or whatever fucking sequel.
Well, yeah, but there are a couple other, like, serial killer movies they did. Like,
yeah, fuck that. Like, See No Evil's terrible. I don't get any
kind
of...
This is what I'm saying. Yeah. This is not... Like, for those of you out there going, oh, well, maybe these guys like See No Evil, no. No, we do
not. Fuck that movie. That is not
a movie.
For multiple reasons. One of which is that I don't need to see Kane with his goddamn mask off. As soon as Kane went, like, bald and no mask, I tuned out. And I will say this, though. From the days of yore when I was a wrestling fan, because of that, every time Luke Evans killed someone, I expected JR Jim Ross to be like, oh, my God, he's literally killed him. Somebody stop the damn movie. I wanted that to happen at four or five different points during this film.
Except that logo at the beginning is the only thing that would clue you in that this is a WWE
movie. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Without that, you would think this is a Lionsgate film. You would think that this is an IFC midnight pickup. Like, yeah. This is something. This is not that. It is wholly off brand for them in all the right ways.
Yeah.
And I was so happy to discover this. And then sad to discover that no one else had seen it.
Well, it might be because apparently the original plan for this movie is that we're going to release it wide, you know, and do the normal theatrical run. And then Anchor Bay bought it up and decided to do a limited theatrical release and then basically just dump it to video. And I know there aren't a lot of big names in this movie, But I mean, let's be frank. Studio horror films need one name, and that's it. If you
They don't actually, for this type of film, you don't need a name at all.
That's true too. Think about most of the horror remakes you've ever seen have at the most one big name, and then a cast of people you might go, oh, I think I saw them, but you don't know their names. So I feel like this could have been a successful wide release.
Don't Breathe has no names in it. Like, we know Stephen Lang because we're genre nerds and we recognize Stephen. But most people are like, wait, why does that guy look familiar?
Exactly.
And then someone like me does the one bit of a Stephen Lang impression they can do where they just go, this is Pandora. and then it's like, oh, yeah, it's that guy. Oh, I love that guy. But yeah, that movie sold without names.
Yeah.
And there were no names in Fetty's previous film, Evil Dead.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, this is a genre where you can get away with just the premise alone. If the premise looks good, there is an audience that will watch it. And this did not need that. This movie could have, if this movie were made now and released now in the post Don't Breathe world, they would have marketed the hell out of it as the next Don't Breathe, and people would be like, oh, hell yes. I want to watch the movie about the criminals trapped in the house with the serial killer that they pissed off.
Yeah.
Like, that's a movie I want to watch. And it is, that's what this is. And this is the super gory version of that with great kills. Like you said, no fat on its pace, really well. It's lots of fun. It has a lot of good laugh out loud moments that just are delivering properly on where it's going. And then a satisfying fucked up conclusion.
Oh, for sure. And not only that, but basically has like a James Bond-esque stating the name of the movie at the end of the movie. Like, it feels very much
like you get to the end and it's like, oh, hey, that character managed to pull it out and survive. No one lives.
Here comes Dr. Death. No one lives. Clipboard to the throat.
Clipboard to the throat, baby.
That hurts. That one hurts a lot.
But, and then the movie's not even totally over.
No,
yet, man.
No, it's not. I want to go back to something you said about comparing this to Don't Breathe. I think I like the fact that this is another movie that hits upon this idea of flipping the dynamic of Predator and Prey in a horror film.
Yeah.
And the whole idea of like, yeah, these are bad people, but they ain't seen nothing yet. They've really picked the wrong person to tangle with, because it's such a great way to flip convention and deliver something that's more unique and something that you are interested in immediately. I mean, that concept is executed so well in this movie that it makes you forgive like a lot of other things that, like I said, there's a lot of dialogue in this movie that just goes over like lead balloons.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh boy, was that the table read? Did you just record the table read? Come on.
The cinematography isn't the greatest.
No, it's very dark. I mean, they shot this in Louisiana and it looks like they used their swamp gas Instagram filter on the camera that they were shooting with. I mean, it's a very, you know, it's got that weird blue hue to it that you see in a lot of contemporary horror films. You're like, where's the blue light coming from? I'm not sure. But again, because of Luke Evans committing 120% and enjoying his own little sociopathic playground of a role, I mean, that alone is worth the price of admission. And then you add to that all the fun kills, you add to that a well-executed concept, and you add to that a very satisfying ending. It's like, yeah, this is the perfect midnight movie. And it's a lot more clever than, I mean, I'd be able to enjoy a midnight movie that was half this clever if it had kills this fun. So it's kind of a double whammy on that front.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm trying to think if, because there's a moment in this movie that just kind of further proves what an inept piece of shit like the young son of the crazy hillbilly family is, where his girlfriend is taking a shower. They've taken
I
Emma.
Love this moment.
This moment, like, it's so fucking weird
it's not just weird. It's actually, it does a really great job of showing just what a fucked up state these people are in.
And what an idiot this guy is.
Oh yeah.
Because basically what happens is this, you know, this younger son and his girlfriend abscond with Emma to this, back to the same motel we've seen at the beginning. And she's taking a shower and Luke Evans creeps in through the window and basically suffocates her with the shower curtain, but then he strings her up like stigmata style. And so the the hillbilly guy walks into the bathroom and she's strung up dead.
He's got a gun in his hand.
He's
just shot a cop.
Yeah.
Like shit is going bad for them.
He shot Officer ADR, I believe was that guy's name.
Officer ADR.
All of his lines are off camera and you're like, that was recorded later and we don't see his face until Kablamtown, right through the eye. But yeah, he walks into the bathroom. She's strung up naked and she... Keep in mind, there is nothing supernatural going on in this movie, but at all.
No.
So she basically rears her head up.
Except that he's kind of supernatural.
Oh, he's a Terminator. He's a Luke Evans Terminator for sure. But she rears her head up like, oh my God, and like wakes up.
And
yeah. And he fucking shoots her in the head.
He blows her head right off. He freaks right the fuck out. And shoots her and blows her head off.
What? Dude, what the fuck? Like, she was still alive. She's your girlfriend. Why did you just blow her head off like she's a zombie and you had to destroy the brain? What the fuck is what the actual fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah.
Come on, man. That moment just was, to me, like, so... It's not that it was unnecessarily violent. It was perfectly necessary to remind us how inept this guy is as a criminal master.
He's the clusterfuck for the entire movie. Like, everything that goes wrong is this dude's fault. Like, this dude keeps doing everything wrong. He's the guy who transgresses and gets everyone else killed.
Yeah.
Everyone else is trying to keep him under control, but failing. And he's the one who gets everyone killed. And then it leads into that amazing... just badass, like, knockdown, drag out. Like, and this is where I really admire the movie. Luke Evans is just a dude. There's a couple times where if people don't fuck up, they could have killed him.
Yeah.
And it's not one of those, aha, I have you now, you know, kind of, I have fooled you. It's, he knows he's dead to rights, and then... the people just really, they fuck up. They don't know what they're doing. They do things wrong. And there's this great moment where, you know, the fuck ups, you know, gang member grabs the shotgun. He's got the drop on Luke Evans. He raises the shotgun, ready to fire. Kong. Emma knocks him the fuck out.
Yeah.
And Luke Evans starts scrambling with his feet. He's like, I gotta admit, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
And she picks up the shotgun and she goes, what? And let him do it? And then he stands there and he waits.
He doesn't get the honor of killing you.
Yeah, he doesn't get the honor of killing you. And he just stands there and he waits for it. And then he just starts walking towards her and he's like taunting her to pull the trigger. Like, pull the trigger.
Yeah.
Go ahead. You know, this is what you've been working towards. You know, this is what I've been building you for. Yada, yada. And then she pulls the trigger, and the reason why he was so cocky was she never bothered to pump the shotgun.
Yeah, he's like, there's a reason it's called a pump-action shotgun. And then he, like, ninja kicks it in the air, and it's like...
And I love how he's like, you college girls. Like, he points it out, he's like, this is just some college girl. Of course she doesn't know how to use a fucking shotgun.
Yeah.
You college girls, you think you got it all figured out. And so that's when he grabs the gun and, you know, does this badass move where he pumps it with one hand and then, you know, swinging it around and firing it right over her head.
She would, at the very least, be deaf at that point.
Like, I wouldn't doubt that she is.
He, like, fires that thing inches from her head and she barely flinches.
Yeah, she doesn't get any more time after that. Like, so it's not like there's any more dialogue going on. Like, she gets the shit kicked out of her, and then the next time we see her, she's at the fucking hospital.
She may be deaf. That's entirely possible. But yeah, no, I love, there's a moment right before that that I think speaks to that this character, at the very least, the concept and the character are very well thought out, because there's this great moment where it's Luke Evans and Emma, and Luke Evans sees the crazy fuck up hillbilly show up with the shotgun and actually pulls Emma out of the way of the shot and takes the shot himself. So it just kind of further puts forth the idea that their relationship is really complicated, because it's like, yeah, he kidnapped her. Yes, she wants him dead, but his training is getting through. Like, some of these broadcasts are, the frequency is just right, and they are breaking through to Emma's airwaves, because he literally feels so, like, responsible for her that he will take, like, he's wearing a vest, but he'll take that shotgun blast to the chest to protect her. She ends up knocking the crazy hillbilly out and saying, I want the honor of killing. Like, it's such a weird fucked up relationship, but you just get the sense that some of that's getting through. Some of that is definitely getting through, and it makes it even fucking creepier. And I really dug that about this movie.
Yeah, like, this is like that final test. And in fact, that's what's really cool about the end of this, is she fails the test.
Mm-hmm.
But he respects her for what she did because she fought.
Yeah.
So he lets her live.
Yeah.
Puts the knife in your, and it's like, oh shoot, he's killing her. And this is the moment where he pulls out the tracking beacon, and we get it. And you know what's funny? This is one of those stupid things. I'm going to ask the question that you're not supposed to ask, because it'd be like, well, who would ask that? But it's like,
the answer is Cargo.
No. It's one of those things. Why is there a blinking light on top of the tracking beacon? Like, that's the question. And the answer is, there's actually an answer. The answer is because the minute he pulls it out and it's got a blinking light on top, the entire audience knows
it's exactly
beacon.
What it is.
Like,
yeah.
But it's like, you wouldn't have a blinking light in a tracking chip that you'd put in somebody, because what would be the point to a fucking blinking
because
light inside?
Because your internal organs don't need a nightlight. So yeah. Why?
But so it like pulls out and there's this blinking red light. I'm like, wow, that's really on the nose. But then again, they literally show it for like a second and a half. And you're like, yeah, it's tracking beacon. And you know that whole storyline. They never explain it. Again, very lean. They trust the audience to understand this movie. You get it. It's not a complicated movie. So they don't, you know, they just fucking go with it. And then he lets her go because she's earned it.
Yeah.
But you know she's going to be fucked up for life, that he made her into what she is.
And then, of course, we get a brief sojourn into Clipboard Murder Town, and then that's it. Then that's credits, guys. And the title proves to be a lie because Emma lives. So it really should be called No One Lives Unless I Fucking Say So.
No one from that crew lived.
Oh, no. No,
not one of them. They're all, if you've gotten this far and we've ruined most of the movie for you, you just need to watch it now. Yeah. Nobody makes it out of this group alive. Everybody dies spectacularly, awfully. Nobody gets just a regular old death. Usually they get two deaths. They get strangled to death and then shot, or they get shot with an arrow and dragged into the bush and lowered into, like, literally almost everybody dies twice. One person gets shot and runs off into the woods and then gets hit by a car.
He spears that guy like he's a fucking marlin and reels him. He has to, I don't know if he like attached that arrow to like the front of a truck or like
had like a winch.
The winch on the front of a truck. Fuck me, does that guy go flying?
Yeah, no, it's the movie plays.
I expected Quint to be on the other end of that fucking thing.
T.S. Quint.
Yes. That's all I'm saying. Just like barrels attached to him.
Luke Evans' eyes, like a doll's eyes.
Like a doll's eyes. You know that moment he looks at you. For that, you get the head, you get the tail, you get six copies of Fast Six. The whole damn thing. But yeah, this is a great fucking midnight movie because it has so many things that it actually does well. And like I said, it's not by any means a great film. There's a lot of things that make it very schlocky, but the character that Luke Evans plays, the relationship he has with his captive, and the concept where it does flip the script and make the people who in any other movie like this would be the aggressors, the prey, this is a really fun fucking movie.
And you know what? Here's one of the other things it doesn't do that I was impressed by, is in any other movie, like even with this premise, they would make us like the criminals. They would give us reasons to care about them. And this movie doesn't. Like, this movie's fine being like, no, these assholes kind of get what they have coming, so you're allowed to enjoy it. You're allowed to savor the death of these characters because these are awful people. So it is a bit of well-earned schadenfreude.
Yeah.
You know, it is schadenfreude. It is a rough, you know, a rough ordeal for some motherfuckers who have it coming. They brought this upon themselves, and you're allowed to enjoy it. And it's what I honestly think elevates it above so much of this genre, which is fucking 35 years old and tired. Like, this is, you know, we forgive movies that were made 35 years ago that have very simple premise that are about a group of people out in the middle of nowhere being stalked by a killer. Now we need something a little more, and this is it. This movie is like, okay, we're going to flip the script. And and they do it so well, and it's so enjoyable, and it's really well worth seeking out.
And that moment that you're talking about where you realize that these are still terrible people, even after the killings have started, there's a cat fight in the house where one girl like choke slams the other into the coffee table, and I'm like, oh,
there's WWE. The WWE.
There it is.
I thought that exact same thing. It's like, ah, they brought in technical advisors to show how to do that just right.
What if a steel cage just dropped at that moment and it just became a Hell in the Cell match? Ooh, Hell in the Cell, all of those people against Luke Evans. I've still got my money on Luke Evans.
Yeah, you do.
And that brings us to the junk food pairing. Now, last week I said that I was going to try and make every junk food pairing a beer. And I found one that is perfect for this movie. Schadenfreude by Surly Brewing Company.
We didn't plan that at all.
I just happened to be like, I wonder if there's a beer called Schadenfreude. And there is. It is a German-style Dunkel, a dark lager by Surly Brewing Company.
Up in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Indeed.
I drink a lot of Surly when I go up north.
Oh, absolutely.
All my friends, it's...
At Convergence, drinking Surly all day or day.
It's like how much of us here in town are like Austin Beer Works. It is that local brewery that everybody loves.
It's the German word literally means shameful joy, and if there is one thing this movie is, it is a shameful joy. Highly recommend No One Lives. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. If you would like to hear more of us, you can find our back catalog on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. You can also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema and like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And again, if you really like the show, please consider contributing to our Patreon, patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. I got to tell you guys, we are up to $250 an episode. So that means we are a mere $50 away from the stretch goal. And if we hit that, that means you guys get to send me either links or DVDs or however you want to get it to me of movies that you want me to review. And I have to watch and review them no matter what it is if you are a patron. So speaking of Schadenfreude, definitely help us get to $300 an episode so that you can subject me to all of the horrors your warped imaginations can come up with. Definitely do that. Cargo, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Twitter at Massaworm, MassaWyrm, or on Facebook, facebook.com/Massaworm.
All right, you can find me on Twitter at BryGuySalisbury, or my Facebook page is facebook.com/BryanSalisburyCritic.
Oh, and as of this week, you can buy your tickets for Doctor Strange November 4th in a theater near you. Please, please go out and see this movie. I'm super proud of it. I finally get to see the final edit next week at the premiere, and I'm very, very excited. I'm very, very proud, and I hope you guys are proud of me.
And enjoy Luke Evans as Doctor Strange in Marvel's... Wait, no, hold on a second.
Oh, God. You know what?
Missed opportunity?
No, I would cast Luke Evans as Dr. Mordred, though. Like, if we were going to remake Dr. Mordred, Luke Evans would be a pretty badass Dr. Stephen Mordred.
So, yeah, hit the lofty heights of Dr. Stephen Mordred, Luke Evans. That's your next career move for certain. We're going to end this show reminding you guys to download all of our episodes because serial killers deal in singularities, but we are numbers, guys.